If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Dashler, beginning the second 50 years of Defense and Foreign Affairs with Gregory Copley, the legacy of Stephen Passani, and also the vision that you must have to understand that history did not end with the decline and fall of the Soviet Union. Geography remains profound. We're going to the Indo-Pacific now, a new theater for exploration. It also didn't end with the victory over the Japanese Emperor Hirohito and his military leadership in 1945. Right now, we have the People's Republic of China advancing across the same island chains and new ones that the Japanese used to wend their way towards Hawaii. The challenge, however, is being matched by the U.S. Marine Corps, I'm happy to say. Gregory, the U.S. Marine Corps sees that the PRC is moving. The Solomon Islands evidence is all we need to say. They're now potentially going to put a military base in the Solomons, which is what Guadalcanal represented to the U.S. military when it's clawed its way back against the Japanese. What can the Marine Corps do about it? What can Australia do about it?
Well, that's a very is a broad topic, and we see that the lessons of World War II are absolutely critical in this. We didn't spend such vast human capital in 41, 42, 43, and so on, going to retaking all of those islands which the Japanese had successfully occupied. We didn't lose that capital just to do it again, and that's what's shaping up now. And one of the interesting things we see with the United States defense structure now is that, I wouldn't say only, but principally, the U.S. Marine Corps under the new Commandant General David Berger, has actually started to think really geostrategically. How do we learn from the lessons from that? How do we reshape the Corps, Marine Corps, to address these specific threats in the Indo-Pacific? And so he's created this Expeditionary Advanced Based Operations Theory, EABO, as its acronym. And he's basically reshaped the Corps. He's taken away a lot of its old heavy armor and heavy artillery assets and some of its aviation assets in order to build a much more nimble force structure. Now, he's fighting uphill within the Defense Department to get that sold, because it requires new classes of ships that will actually land troops on the beaches and get them off the beaches in a way which can be done flexibly, even in an age of massive satellite surveillance of assets at sea. And he's doing this with a new light amphibious warship program, which will be, I think, very profound if the Navy lets him do it. The Navy said, don't worry, we'll, as they do, they build the ships for the Marine Corps and man them. And they then started putting out tenders for with five shipbuilders to build or to come up with designs for a new light amphibious warship, one which would go onto the beaches. And what all of them have done, all of those five contractors have done, is basically reproposed technology which was World War II technology and not even very good then, at a time when there's a new set of technologies developed over the last 30 years or so called the stern landing vessel, which is capable of really addressing how the beaches are found within these islands in the South Pacific, and the specific types of wavelengths you get in the South Pacific themselves. So there's a technology available. It's part of this new U.S.-Australian cooperation, and it's quite possible that this will be one of the key elements of the link-up with Australia, UK, United States, the AUKUS, a military alliance, which is beginning to take off. And yes, critically, they have to be able to move, even before they build these ships, move Australia and the US into a position of greater dominance over the Solomon Islands, which is, as you say, where Guadalcanal is, which was retaken at huge cost by Allied forces in 42. And we have to look at other areas where the PRC is already entrenched in Papua New Guinea, within hundreds of miles of the Australian coastline. They are increasing their penetration of Indonesia. They have retaken their control over the government of Myanmar, Burma, because the United States essentially rejected both the military and the civilian leaderships of Myanmar. And so Beijing has walked back in again to take control of that, which means that the Chinese will have an overland route from mainland China down through Myanmar to the Indian Ocean, just as they've got another one down from Xinjiang province of the PRC down through the Azad Kashmir part of which is linked to Pakistan and then down to the Indian Ocean there. All of these show that the People's Republic of China is expanding as aggressively and as rapidly as possible into the Indo-Pacific region, and it requires this new capability, but which the Marine Corps is doing and which Australia is attempting to do, to move back to a position of Western dominance. And this is making up for years and years of neglect by the West of securing the interests of the South Pacific nations and basically Southeast Asian nations as well. So it's really a highly significant time. And AUKUS, the new Australia-UK-US pact, is starting to have an impact. Of course, that's moved from just providing nuclear submarine technology from the US and the UK to Australia. It's moved into the cooperation and building of strategic unmanned aerial vehicles, basically unmanned fighter aircraft, and also now to building on an historical Australia-US relationship in the development of air-breathing hypersonic weapons. Australia is the big pioneer in that and had offered the technology to the US decades ago. The US was not interested. Now it is very, very interested.
And Gregory, we just have a minute here. I want to make certain that I understand Australia's in this with the US Marine Corps and the US. During the build-up to the Second War, we looked upon Britain as the unsinkable aircraft carrier. Is Australia the unsinkable aircraft carrier in the South Pacific? We just have about 30 seconds.
Yes, it is. It is a firm base. It was severely threatened by Japan in World War II. It is being severely threatened again by the People's Republic of China, down through New Guinea, down through Indonesia and the South Pacific. So this is why Australia is now redoubling a massive defense buildup, which is a cornerstone of the new election.
Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, 50 years later, and now the second 50 years with focus on the Indo-Pacific. However, we're going to turn to another strategic opportunity, the Horn of Africa. This is CBS Eye on the World.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.